As the tide climbed over the doorstep and spread across the flagstone floor, the cottagers retreated upstairs. Looking from their bedroom window, they could see the full moon glittering over the sea-covered meadow. An old shire horse stood patiently up to its knees in water. But nobody panicked. The village had known it was coming. It was a big spring tide, given greater range from the exceptional low pressure, the succession of northwesterly gales, and turbocharged with runoff from the incessant rain. This was the East Coast yachting village of Pym Mill on the River Orwell in Suffolk, back in the days when it was also still a working hamlet, with shipwrights, fishermen and barge skippers among its inhabitants. I can recall the village elders telling me about carting valuables upstairs, balancing bric-a-brac on tables, rolling up rugs and waiting for the ebb. This was a happening in the humdrum life of waterside existence in places like Hull, the Wash, and villages on the North Norfolk coast, as well as village-side creeks in Essex, Suffolk and Kent, which the souls of Wales, the Somerset Levels and the Upper Thames have experienced instead as a watery hell. Although the recent deluge is from heaven, it has been exacerbated by rising sea levels and sometimes big tides too. Before the arrival of electric light, the cottages of yesteryear were illuminated by candle or oil lamp. There were no fitted carpets. Cottages were linoed or tiled. There were no flat-screen TVs, computer consoles or multimedia systems. Entertainment in the working sailor's cottage would come from melodeon, fiddle or newspaper crossword. The material world could handle a flood more easily than today. Then, in the winter of 1953, a surge tide breached the sea walls all around the East Coast, most famously at Canvey Island, Essex, where 59 people drowned in their beds. My father, Richard, was one of many local sailors who rallied round to make rescues from old yacht skiffs and sandbag the breaches. Some days later, a rickety wooden farmhouse on nearby Two Tree Island was found to be deserted. The table in the dining room was laid for supper, but untouched. As police examined the food, they were puzzled by the fact that the butter had been flattened and the bread crust cracked. Eventually, somebody thought to look up. There on the ceiling was an imprint of the butter. The table had floated up to the rafters on the flood, crushed the food, and then dropped back on the ebb. Holland had suffered a much worse fate, and after the tide shrank away, a wall was built virtually around the whole country. The flooding was taken more seriously in Britain too, and sea walls were raised, the Thames Barrier eventually built. The recent pathetic aerial photographs of flooded properties with aquamarine swimming pools as disembodied squares of water, surrounded by the brackish Thames, cathedrals as islands, and coastal dwellings being demolished by wrecking ball seas, show us things are now very different. Perhaps we are suffering not so much from climate change as climate changed. And ominously, the Environment Agency already has a list of areas earmarked for potential abandonment to the sea. So might it be time to build our own wall around England and Wales? A barrier has been considered for the Bristol Channel and another across the mouth of the Thames. With turbines inserted, they could produce energy from the ebbing rainwater from rivers as well as the tides. What is for sure is that there's no going back to simple big tide nights, where at Pym Mill on one such occasion, the corpse of an old bargeman awaiting burial lay in his coffin, which had been made by the local shipwright Harry King. The son of the dead sailor reported at the wake, "Harry's as good with coffins as he is with boats. Dad never made a drop of water."